Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. On the show today, I will be chatting with Michael Dunn. He's the founder of the Irish Black Cats, the only Sunderland supporters club here in Ireland. He set up the club when he just left college. Off the Ball's Will O'Callaghan will be on to look back at what was a very hectic transfer market. And we'll meet a man who won't cut his hair until Manchester United win 5 games in a row. His last haircut was over 330 days ago.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of The Kickoff. Yes, it is the international break. There actually is no Premier League matches on this weekend, but the kickoff goes on. There's still plenty to talk about, plenty of fans to meet, and we also have to talk about the closing of the transfer window, finally. If you want to get in touch with the show, kickoff@todayfm.com. That's the email address. Any suggestions? Anything at all? kickoff@todayfm.com. That's where you can get in touch. Also, what would really help the show is if you'd like or follow, wherever you're listening to this on podcast form, if you just hit that subscribe button or that follow button or gave it a like. I've gone 5 episodes in without actually asking anyone to do that, but it does really help the show and it pushes this show up more for other football fans to see. So if you like it at all, please hit that follow button. Now, as I said, it is the international break. So to start off the show, we shall celebrate for some people. Other people love the transfer window. I'm kind of glad it's done. I thought there's only one man to talk to. It is the king of transfers, the one and only Will O'Callaghan from Off the Ball. How are you, Will?
I'm good, Cathal. What a title and what a transfer window, particularly for the Premier League clubs. They blew every other league out of the water this time round. £3.1 billion that they managed to spend. And when we talk about all the financial rules and where you're, you know, potentially going to be reined in by PSR and whatever else, the trading loss for Premier League clubs, £1.4 billion. So they outspent all of the other major leagues in Europe combined.
Oh my God.
Such was the spending. And particularly the spending. We'll get into it about who's won and lost the transfer window. But when you particularly look at, say, clubs like Liverpool and Arsenal, who have pushed the boat out massively this time, this is big, big spending. I think I was reading during the week, I think Miguel Denay used the line, it was like the Premier League has got high in its own supply. There's so much money that is now going through the Premier League that even the teams towards the bottom of the league call are outspending some of the traditional massive clubs around Europe, where you've got AC Milan being outspent by Nottingham Forest. That is the point that we've reached with the Premier League now.
Yeah, it's obscene at the moment, isn't it? Some of the numbers that have been thrown out. It is a good question to start off. Who do you think has won the transfer window? I think it's a pretty obvious one, but go on.
Yeah, unquestionably it's Liverpool. I mean, it's a bit of a disappointment to take on the final day in that they didn't get Mark Gay in, which probably would have just balanced their workout a little bit. And I wonder whether they'll regret haggling with Crystal Palace and Parrish right up until the end of the window. If maybe they had made the bid of around £35 million a few weeks ago, would Crystal Palace have been keen to do the business as opposed to it going down on deadline day? The official reason that was given from Palace for this deal not going through is that they were trying to get a replacement in. That wasn't possible, particularly given the nature of deadline day. And Mark Gay is the one guy, when we talk about a lot of the signings that have happened in this transfer window, who conducted himself perfectly throughout the window. He played really well in Palace's first few games of the season, scored a terrific goal from the 3-0 win against Aston Villa last weekend. At the same time, Emi Martinez is like refusing to be part of the Villa squad because he's looking to get a transfer on the final day. Gay conducts himself perfectly. He's only got a year left on his contract, so understandably, this is the last time the Crystal Palace could make money. But the reports during the week were that Oliver Glasner, their manager, who is definitely desired by Bayer Leverkusen, now that Erik ten Hag has got the boot there, it was a case of Glasner saying, right, we lose Mark Gay after already losing Essay during this window as well. There's a strong possibility that they could lose Glasner as part of this window too. And maybe that was just too much for the Crystal Palace hierarchy to think that they would lose their key defender, their best attacker and their manager in the one window. So now they have to accept the fact they're probably going to lose Mark Gay realistically on a free next year. So
isn't it kind of a sad story in a way that it seems like the way a player is going to get what he wants is if he downs tools and won't train, won't play for the club, like Alexander Isak, gets what he wants. Gay is the ultimate professional. And on deadline day, he's left in the lurch.
Yeah, there's a message for you there, kids. You know, down tools, and you will get eventually what you want, because the club will realise that actually they can't afford to lose your value. Look, I mean, I found it very distasteful, both Alexander Isak's statements in, well, it was about a week to go in the window, where he basically said that the situation had become irreconcilable and that Newcastle had broken promises that they'd made to him previously. I will always say that the only promise that really matters when it comes to a player and the relationship they have with a club is the contract. And he still had 3 years left at Newcastle. And Isak had made it incredibly clear that he would not reintegrate back into the group. I think once the members of the Saudi PIF who went to meet him at his house couldn't convince him to stay, and no doubt I'm sure they were talking about potentially more money, once that wasn't a possibility, I think Newcastle were in that awkward situation where you don't want a prized asset, one of the best players in the Premier League, sitting on the bench or maybe among your reserves for 6 months. Every club would love to turn around and say, actually, we would love to be hard-nosed and we're not going to give in no matter what happens. But realistically, once they got to the point that Liverpool said, here's 125, Isak basically accepted he wasn't going to take 5 million that he would have got as part of the deal normally as a loyalty bonus. It came to an even 130 for Newcastle. It wasn't the 150 they quite wanted. But again, they were signing a want-away forward from Brentford in Wissa, who also had down tools just before the transfer window, and eventually got what he wanted.
Gary Lineker on his podcast with Michael Richards and Alan Shearer. Our competition, Will. The competition.
Yeah. Well, what are they doing in the charts, Carl? What are they doing?
Yeah, I had him up on the ropes on the first week, that's for sure. They were talking about it. Gary just made a good point that it's a strange one all the same, this transfer market, where you're buying and selling players, because it's not really like that in other sports, and it's not like that in any walk of life. And let's say, if you said, you know, you wanted to leave and go to another podcast right now, I couldn't really stop you if you handed in your notice. But it's a strange one, the world of football. You know what I mean? If you want to say, I want to go to this rival podcast, no, you're not going. I'll decide when you're going. Even if you are contracted, I think you can kind of sometimes break a contract. I'm not saying what Isak has done is right here, or anyone downing tools, not at all. But it is just, it's a funny old world, this whole transfer malarkey.
The whole thing about the transfer window, right, and transfers and everything else, I find it all a little bit bizarre, because there are some fans who seem to enjoy the idea of the dopamine hit that comes from particularly opening up Twitter, now X, and flicking through to see what David Ornstein or Fabrizio Romano is saying, and when a here we go happens, and they're waiting to see the transfer happen. And almost they're excited to watch what's now 7 o'clock, which used to be midnight once upon a time, when the transfer window slammed shut, as Sky Sports told us many years ago, and they're waiting to see who's going to move. And almost the idea of your club getting a transfer and what's happening off the pitch becomes nearly more exciting than what happens in the 8 to 9 months when the actual football is taking place. I'm a bit with David De Gea on this one, who was making the point last week that really the transfer window, it should go back that it closes at the start of the season, as opposed to having players who are unsettled 2 games into the campaign.
Yeah.
And you end up with a situation like Emi Martinez last weekend, where he's not part of the Aston Villa squad because he's waiting on a call from Manchester United. He's wondering what might happen if that doesn't go through. Could he end up going to Turkey? And now eventually, after the international window, he has to come back kind of with his tail between his legs. But it's emerged a little bit since that Aston Villa effectively told him earlier this year, because of their PSR concerns around their wage bill, that, look, if you can find another club, we wouldn't stand in your way if a reasonable bid was to come through. So maybe it's a case of Martinez's agent left it a little bit too late in the window. But again, it was just that bonkers moment where you've got Unai Emery, the manager of Aston Villa, just repeatedly saying the name of the backup goalkeeper at Aston Villa who was starting in order to get past the 1 minute obligation, so he didn't have to mention where his goalkeeper was and the fact that his goalkeeper was pushing for a move. So it is really, really weird that the transfer window dragged on as long as it did, because we also had that mini transfer window which happened just before the Club World Cup, which kind of amped up a lot of the business early on in the summer as well. Some people love it and some people live to see what Ornstein and Fabrizio are saying, and they live for the idea of what their club is going to do. Maybe this is a certain impact of FIFA and maybe Football Manager on top of people as well. But for me, I just think if it could be a bit closer to the start of the actual season, it's a lot easier on everyone involved rather than people trying to push for moves at the last second.
Yeah, although we did get a spicy Newcastle-Liverpool match in the middle of it all in St James's Park, which was quite the night. Yeah, and obviously Liverpool spending crazy amounts of money. Wirtz is in there, Ekitike, Kirkus, Frimpong, they are just spending crazy amounts of money. Give us your loser. So just to wrap up, who do you think came out the worst in this market,
Palace,
this window?
Palace and Brentford, I think, are the two that stand out, really.
Newcastle as well? Palace. Would you throw Newcastle in there as well?
Yeah.
I suppose they have a few bob, though. They've gotten a bit of money now.
They have money, and look, they spent a bit towards the end of the window. Again, whether Jacob Ramsey is going to be transformative or not, I'm not sure. I unfortunately have to work with a few Villa fans, and they were actually happy enough to get a reasonable fee. They weren't quite in the John Duran territory, where they felt like, this is crazy money and I can't believe this has been offered, but still, they weren't too sad about the fact that Jacob Ramsey was making the move to Newcastle. They've signed a tall, elegant striker who doesn't particularly like to head the ball. They love to cross the ball in. So let's see how Valdemeda gets on at Newcastle. Viss has obviously been a really good player for Brentford, and that brings you around to Brentford having a really bad window. I feel for Keith Andrews. I feel for Creefin Kelleher, where Kelleher looked like he was going to be the really good signing to kick off the window for Brentford. And then Brentford lost their two most important attacking players for the last 3 to 4 seasons in one go. And it just feels like when you take Norgaard out of midfield as well, the heart has been ripped out of their team. Now, again, there are lots of people who are right and close to Brentford who say that they actually have really good players who are ready to step up into the first team. But it's difficult to take away that amount of quality in one window and also put in a rookie manager in the Premier League and to see it work out. Again, just purely with Irish glasses on here, I would love for things to work out for Nathan Collins and for Kelleher and for Andrews in charge of the team. But I think this could be difficult with just the players that they've lost. So yeah, I think you'd have to put the two of them fairly low down. I think Palace, with just the players that they've lost and how kind of ravaged their squad looks now going into Europe, and also they're probably not going to kick on the Premier League having lost so much quality. Losing SA particularly is an absolute killer for Crystal Palace in this window. And a team who I think have done reasonably okay and quietly at a time when Daniel Levy has left, just when I think of winners and losers, I actually thought Spurs did reasonably well out of this window by the end of it. So Colo Moyani is a very, very decent striker. I think he would have ended up at Juventus if they had been able to get the finances together for it. He's left them a few interesting players. Xavi Simons has come in for quite a bit of money, but has been impressive at Leipzig. Like, the issue for Spurs is that they've lost two generational players over the last 2 years in Son Heung-min and in Harry Kane. Whether the players that they have there step up. But if it works out for Richarlison, if it works out for Brandon Johnson, and Kulusevski comes back to fitness and starts playing well, you start to think actually Spurs have got a pretty decent squad and have got a very good manager in Thomas Frank, and a proven Premier League manager at this stage in Thomas Frank as well. I think they might be the dark horses coming out of this window, where they've done reasonable business, but everyone else has been looking at the shiny transfer record targets and everything that's happened elsewhere in the league.
At least it's done now. I think we can just kind of crack on with the football. I'd say there's a lot of managers that are happy with that.
Well, the managers like, but what I hate is you open up the BBC, transfer rumor thing, and even on the 2nd of September, it's still there, which starts with players who've missed out on a move in this window but are, now available in January, and who's going to move and who might get the Coutinho-style move in January, where a player was, denied it in August, but it doesn't work out for the first few months of the season and they get their move in January. Look, obviously there's a massive market for this. There's people behind the scenes who must look at the traffic that's going onto websites and must look at the fact that this shifts papers, and obviously it does a huge amount of business on social media, that even when the transfer window dies, I don't think Fabrizio Romano even goes for a holiday. I think he, the other day, he just put up some of the tables from across the leagues and said he had a podcast ready to explain what had happened across the transfer window. So they don't sleep, because I presume they realise that actually fans absolutely love this stuff and they're only just thinking about what's going to happen in 3 months' time.
You made a good point. I think a lot of it could be from the likes of Football Manager and FIFA and these kind of games as well. And your man Fabrizio, I'd love to stand with him on deadline day as his phone is pinging. How does he must have some contact list. It's absolutely incredible. Well, that's it. I promise to everyone listening, that's the end of the transfer chat until January, of course. Will O'Callaghan.
Until next week when someone gets injured.
Will, thanks very much.
Pleasure, Carl. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
The kickoff with Carl Minogue on Today FM.
Now it is time to talk to another fan here on the kickoff. And this time we're heading to Sunderland. Michael Dunn is from the Irish Black Cats, the official supporters group for Sunderland fans here in Ireland. Michael, how's it going?
Oh, good calling yourself. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, sound for talking to me. I was looking at the Premier League table. We're into the international break now, and I'd say you think, do you know what? Let's just finish it off now. This is great. We're looking great at the moment.
Yeah, give us Europa League next year. Absolutely. We couldn't have asked for a better start to the season. We probably got a little bit of luck with the start of the season. We had West Ham, obviously, who are struggling with Graham Potter at the moment, and then a trip away to Burnley, and then Brentford at home. So you were looking at those games thinking that we'll have to get some points on the board, because I know especially come December, I think we've got Liverpool, Newcastle and Man City back to back.
Yeah.
And obviously we'll get into the fact we have a lot of new signings. I think they're all going to the African Cup of Nations. So we probably are looking at thinking that we need to get results early doors.
Yeah, that will be a tricky time. Actually, let's just speak about the signings now, because we're not long after the transfer window closing. And over the summer, like, he have made 15 new signings, spent an estimated around £160 million, more than any other newly promoted team in the Premier League history. You're definitely spending a few bob. Hopefully it doesn't backfire, because it's a totally a new team now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, we're kind of lucky with the fact that, you know, we spent very little over the last few years. We kind of methodical approach with the owners and the sporting director. They're all about young players and, you know, buying lads from academies like in Spurs and United and City cheap and bringing them through. So he probably had, like, our owner is a young 28-year-old Swiss billionaire. So I think he's keeping his wallet for the Premier League. And yeah, we've spent massive money. Like, I mean, some of the signings, obviously, the likes of Xhaka, Diarra, other lads like that. They're just huge, huge signings for us. We probably weren't anticipating the money to be spent. I think, to be honest, you know, looking at the lads we bought, I'd be confident enough that we'll stay up given the signings we bought. There's a lot of experience in the team now, athleticism. You know, you need a lot of pace and power, which is obviously what they've targeted. And in fairness, they kept some of the best lads from last year still around as well. So there's a good mixture there. We definitely need a bit of that experience. And obviously, the last first few games I've seen, Xhaka has been excellent for that. Like, his communication and just skills has been huge.
Yeah, do you feel like it's definitely not as a scary prospect as you might have first thought when you were promoted to the Premier League? Obviously, we've seen the last number of years that the three teams that do go up seem to just bounce back down again. It's like a yo-yo effect. Do you think there's definitely, it feels like out of the three teams that have been promoted this year, it looks like one will survive, you would think. And I'm sure you feel pretty happy at the moment anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think in fairness, the last couple of years, the three teams that came up were just particularly poor teams. And I think obviously, you know, Ipswich obviously spent big money last year, but if you look at the signings they brought in, they just brought in a lot of Championship players that have done well. And it didn't look like a team that was going to stay up. I think we've gone a bit of a different approach. We've, you know, we scout a lot in the French market, especially the French league. We've bought a serious amount of players from there. I do think, in fairness, I think there's a good chance that definitely, as you said, one will stay up, two could stay up, because the Premier League this year, you're probably looking at the bottom six, seven. You could say the teams now, there's a few of them that are going to struggle. They've been there a while. So I think it actually could be an interesting relegation battle this year. In terms of us, I think we've a good chance, but we probably need to get a few wins, a good few wins before Christmas, just to build a bit of momentum, because I know for a fact, come December, January, we're going to get decimated. And it's going to be a bit of a struggle based on the fixture list we have then. But we've given ourselves a chance. You can't say they haven't gone for it, in fairness. So
yeah,
I think everyone's sort of fairly positive at the moment.
Yeah, and it's the likes of Wolves and Brentford have been mentioned as teams that can go down as well. So, you know, yourselves or Leeds could definitely stay up, and you've already beaten Brentford. So that's a good start there. You know, they're the teams that you need to be beating, really, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And I think Stadium of Light's going to be a fortress this year. I was at the first two home games of the season, and the place is just bouncing every week. There's such a good feel, a good factor around the city. Like, I mean, obviously, it's probably been spoken about before that, you know, that Netflix series, you see, if you watch that, the importance of the football club to the city generally is just huge. Like, it just goes hand in hand. So when the club is going well, the city is good, everyone's happy. So there's a huge positivity around at the moment. We'll fill it out every year. I think we sold 36,000 season tickets this year.
Wow.
So, you know, like, I mean, there's I think there's only a couple of thousand tickets going on general sale for every game at the
well,
moment. So.
Yeah, well, it holds 49,000 Stadium of Light, though. Yeah. So, like, yeah, work that one out. And how many tickets are allocated to the away fans as well? Maybe about 9,000, maybe. Yeah. I'd say those days over in Sunderland are grey crack.
Yeah. We've had some good days out, in fairness. Like, we've obviously got a fairly big supporters club now. Like, in Ireland, it's kind of grown and grown over the last few years since I set this up in 2018. But at the start, like, I was going over to the games and it was just, you know, there was a, I think we had our first meeting in town for a League One game, maybe 10 or 12 lads turned up. And just as the year's gone on, it's got bigger and bigger. There's about 100, 120 of us to go over, like, not all at the same time, obviously, but there'll be a core 20, 30 lads and they come from all around Ireland. So the lads, like, they get up at 3 a.m. from Cork, drive up, go to the game, drive home afterwards in Dublin. It's just madness. But, like, the fans, I think, you know, you get to know the fans when you go over there and stuff. And they actually, they just can't believe that there's a core group of lads that come from Ireland weekly, like, away and home to all the games, supporting them. And they sort of really appreciate that. So, yeah, you've got crack. And in fairness, the fans are real, they're kind of similar to Irish people. Like, they're kind of working class, want to have a bit of crack, have fun, support the team, go to the match, go home afterwards after a few points. Like, there's a good atmosphere now, and especially now at the moment when the team's going well, it's just like there's a huge momentum behind it, I think, at the moment, and it's really good to see.
So you set up the Irish Black Cats. What age are you, Michael?
30.
Right. What age were you when you set it up?
Yeah, 23. I was just out of college, so like my dad's a huge Sunderland fan. Like, he goes back from the 60s. He supported, like, Sunderland with Charlie Hurley. He was a footballer that from Cork that played for them. And like, since I was a child now, like, he was bringing me to games since I went to my first game in 2002. So I was 8. It was actually a derby with Newcastle. So that was when Kevin Phillips and Niall Quinn were playing for us. And Shay Given was in goal that day for Newcastle as well. But yeah, like, so I've been going since I was a kid, and I got the bug early doors, like, and I just completely, completely infatuated by the club. So kind of as my dad, progressively went less and less as I got older, and then I was like, Jesus, who am I going to go to these games with? So I said, I just set this up. I put out an interview I did with there's a fan site called the Roker Report, which is like the big fanzine for Sunderland, and that just grew legs. And you kind of find out there's actually a lot of Irish fans in Sunderland fans in Ireland, like, and they're coming out slowly but surely. So it's grown a lot now, like, and it's a huge amount of us, like, that are involved.
So what does it take to run a supporters club? You obviously just set up a group, and then on social media, is that how you kind of started to find people? Or even your first meetup, what did you do or where did you go?
Yeah, so we kind of, basically what I did is I put my email, I made an email account for the group, put it towards on that interview, and then lads just emailed me if they're interested, and then we have a Twitter page, which was, I got a lot of following as well. So the first meeting we have, I think it was we played Bristol Rovers, I think it was, it was League One or a cup game. And we met in, you know, the pub, the living room in O'Connell Street. I think it's gone now.
Yeah.
I just booked out a table and 10 of us turned up for that. That was 2018, I think. So that was the start of it. And then it grew and grew. We have a big WhatsApp group now. I have to have it muted sometimes because there's so many messages that goes in it. But there's about 130 in that. And then we have a separate members group. It's just for lads that kind of go regularly and want to get away tickets. So, like, the big thing for me is sort of sorting lads out for tickets for away matches, especially. So the club are very good to us. They kind of look after the branches. They call them the international branches. So the ones that are outside of England that are going over, if you kind of like email them, and they within reason, they'll give you a few tickets for the supporters club and to get the tickets to go to the games and stuff. So that's the biggest thing. But I found now over the summer, there's so many more people, lads that I've met. Like, I know there's a few guys I've met years ago when I was a kid, but they're back involved. They really bought into it again. And I was over at the Brentford game on Saturday, and the whole flight home, the Ryanair flight home, was just all Sunderland fans. Cool. Like, I would say 95% was just Sunderland fans. I think Ryanair have actually put on an extra flight to Newcastle now because Sunderland are back in the Premier League. So that'll show you how well it's going. Like,
yeah, it's incredible. It just shows you when you get back into the top flight, you know, the fans are they come out of the woodwork. They're hungry for more because and you want to experience those match days as well, don't you? Have you been to a good few of the Newcastle Sunderland games? Like I would say they are special.
The atmosphere is amazing. It's a it's kind of like, you know, firm, like they hate each other.
Yeah, is it tense?
They detest each other, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't hate Newcastle, obviously, because I'm not from there, so I probably don't have the same intensity of hatred for them. But when you're there, you can't help but hate Newcastle for the 90 minutes of the match, because you just have no choice but to. But, like, the intensity is huge. Yeah, it's I was at the last one now. I think you remember they got each other in the FA Cup there. Started last year, we got hammered now. But we're playing them in December now in Stadium of Light. Like, that's going to be... it's going to be a serious game. The atmosphere will be amazing. Like, the atmosphere for the games at the moment, even last year at the end of the season, with the playoffs and the first few home games, has been serious. I'd say it up a couple of levels now for the Newcastle game. It's just so tense. You know, you have to leave the fans in the stadium, the Newcastle fans, for an hour and a half afterwards, clear the stadium before you can take them out. It's like heavily policed and everything. Yeah, there's a serious intensity to the rivalry between the two of them.
It'll be interesting to see what the crack will be like when you're all on the one plane. I'm sure it'll be good crack, like, because, yeah. You know, once you get into the stadium, it's different, and you're amongst the locals and the, you know, the people from Sunderland and Newcastle. But I'd imagine if you're sitting beside a guy on your Ryanair flight and he has his Newcastle jersey on, he's a lad from Galway, let's say you're having the crack anyway, like, and then you'll just go your separate ways.
Absolutely, there'll be no trouble then. Until we get near the stadium.
yeah. Then you have to be pulled apart. How many games do you get to get over to in a year? Sounds like you go to a nice few.
Yeah, I've a season ticket now. Like, so, I've had a season ticket for the last 10 years maybe. But so, I'll get to about 10 to 15 this year now. So, but I'm getting married next year. I'm looking to buy a house and stuff. So things are gonna change. I'm making the most of it now before things start getting more serious in terms of actual personal life. So yeah, I know it's a good year to be going over, in fairness. But we've like we've got in our group alone, we've loads of lads with season tickets, probably 20-30 lads. So, you know, we kind of just, if we don't go, we give them to other Irish lads in the group. So there's always a good few going over. I'd say on any weekend you have at least 30 Irish lads with Sunderland jerseys on in Dublin Airport. You'll probably see them all the time. Like, so it's consistent number, in fairness.
Yeah, that sounds like they're great days out as well. Ever since I've started the show, I'm getting more and more jealous of fans and supporters clubs, and I'm like, I want to join one now. They sound like a great day out. What's your hope for the season, Michael? What, like, I'm sure it was survival at the start, but now are you eyeing something a bit different after that start? Are you not getting ahead of yourself or what?
I won't get too far ahead of myself, in fairness. Now, if you said to me now we'll finish 17th, I'll absolutely take it, but I just have a feeling we're going to do better than 17th. And obviously, like, I mean, I won't act like I know a lot about all these lads we bought, because I don't.
Yeah.
But they seem to be of a high caliber, like, and we're spending the money. And, you know, I trust the recruitment in our club, because they've made very few mistakes over the last few years in terms of players they brought in. So I'd say I'd be fairly happy, obviously, with 17, but I think we'll probably finish 13th to 14th. I think we'll be relatively comfortable. I don't think we'll be going down to the last few games of the season sweating about survival. I think, you know, we've enough experience and enough goals in us. I mean, we bought a striker there from Ajax there. I think his name is Brian Brobbey.
Yeah, 17 million, did I see something? Or
big money, yeah. Mm. And obviously, Isidore has had a good start. He's got two goals already. And Mienda, who's been starting the first three games, has scored as well. So I think we'll get goals, and we're fairly... the thing with our manager, Gilles Labrie, he's very solid. Like, I mean, he's kind of set, he kind of likes to play in the counter. We're hard to break down, and I think we've the pace and the break to score a good few goals in most of the games this season. So, I think we'll finish comfortably enough mid-table.
You'll enjoy it either way, Michael. I'm sure of it.
If absolutely.
People are listening and they're Sunderland fans and they want to get in touch with the Irish Black Hats, what should they do?
Yeah, so we've a Twitter page, or X is called now. If you DM Irish Black Cats on Twitter, you'll find us, and I'll get back to you, and then I'll send you all the details on. All members are welcome. We're always looking to find more Sunderland Irish fans. I thought I've got most of them by now, but I think they're still coming out of the woodwork. So if anyone else is out there, please get in touch.
Yeah, fair play to you. And setting up a supporters club just as you came out of college, is it just shows how special a place Sunderland is in your heart from a young fella from Dublin. It's brilliant to see. So fair play to you. Like, what a story. Hopefully you have a good year. Enjoy it and enjoy the trips over and back. And best of luck with the wedding and getting the house and all. And hopefully you'll be celebrating. Maybe you could have your honeymoon by just going over to another Sunderland game. I'd say your fiance will love that.
I think the lads are looking for the stag in Sunderland anyway, so that's on the cards possibly as well.
Yeah, maybe that's safer. Maybe that's safer. Yeah, Michael Dunn from the Irish Black Cats, the founder of the Irish Black Cats, the official supporters group for Sunderland fans here in Ireland. Thanks a million for talking to me. Best of luck this season, man.
Thanks so much, Kyle. Thank you very much.
On the way, we're going to chat with Frank Islett from the United Strand. You might have seen him online. He's the man who won't cut his hair until Manchester United win 5 games in a row.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
I am very excited about this. I am now joined by Frank Islett from the United Strand. You might have seen Frank online. He is the man who won't cut his hair until how long, Frank?
Until Man United win 5 games in a row.
Ah, there you go. How are you? First of all, you look incredible.
Thank you very much.
Are you starting to like the hair at this stage?
What can I say? It's growing on me.
Hey, come on. Are you regretting it at all? Like, how many days? We're over 330 days at this stage that you have not cut your hair because Manchester United have not won a game 5 games in a row.
Yeah, so it's day 334 today. There has been a few regrets, but no, on the whole, I feel like I set out to kind of spread some laughs to people and I've kind of achieved that. So yeah, I just need the results to come now.
Yeah, like how long did you think it would last when you first started? Why did you start it as well?
So I thought it would be a bit of fun to kind of spread some humour in a very difficult time for fellow Man United fans. I thought, yeah, I just want to do something to kind of give them a bit of a laugh. I didn't realise was how many rival fans were also interested because they don't want me to ever cut my hair ever again. I genuinely thought it would go on for 3 or 4 months. I mean, we were going through a bit of a tough time when I started, but there was no way. I don't think anyone thought that it would carry on for this long. Just Man United's form in general. I thought it would go on for 3 and 4 months, bit of fun, bit of a laugh, and then that would be it. But didn't quite work out like that.
Have you a partner in your life? Have you a girlfriend?
Yeah, I do. Yes.
And what does she think?
She really likes trees.
She's delighted, so.
No, she's supportive, we'll put it that way. But all kind of friends and family and my partner just, laughing along, really.
Yeah, because I went right back to day one and obviously, but honestly, you look like a different man. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is like two different people completely, yeah.
What I love is when you mess around with your hair in some of your videos. So you've tried straightening it, which is an incredible video. And, even just the wet, curly look, that quite suits you. I think that's cool.
Yeah, no, I should probably bring it back more than I have done. But I think that for impact, most people like to see the full bush.
Yeah, it's just wild. Can you even wear a hat? Could you wear a hat?
I don't think so. Even a while ago, there was actually someone that makes like Man United bucket hats out of shirts, and they gave me an extra large one so that it would fit over my hair. And even now, I don't think it fits.
No. Do you look ahead now to this season and see a few games and think possibly this is where we might get a good run? Because as we speak, the next game is against Manchester City. Then it's Chelsea. I mean, like, you're at one game as we speak right now. You've a one game win because they beat Burnley. So, but you're probably not too confident about a five game streak.
I think that even the Man City game is probably a bit different because it's a derby. Anything can happen, no matter who's in form, who isn't. Actually, both teams aren't at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
But I feel like that one, anything can happen. So there's a possibility that we can get a result there. I do feel quietly confident for that. But I think that the Chelsea one is the one that kind of worries me a bit more.
Really?
They are very good. And it's wins only, so even if
draw.
Yeah, it would go back to zero again. So yeah, that's the difficulty of it. But I think there's some games between kind of end of November into the middle of December that kind of look like a good run of games there.
So you have Everton, maybe Crystal Palace, West Ham, Wolves. There's a couple of winnable ones there.
That's the one.
You're just hoping that, oh my God, please don't have another Christmas Day with a big wild head of hair. Is it starting to grow? Yeah. Is it starting to grow even faster now as it gets longer, or is it, do you even notice it now? Because I'd imagine there was probably one like period of time where the hair was just growing crazy.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it does it in stages. I feel like I don't notice, and then suddenly it's like the next stage, just getting bigger and bigger. I think it's weird as well because of the way that my hair is. It's like, even, you know, on a humid day is like slightly different to one that isn't as humid and stuff. So yeah, it's like, it's almost different sizes every day, I think.
Yeah, it's bad. You must be spending a fortune on shampoo and conditioner at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I need a sponsor, please.
Do you have regrets of not making it five games unbeaten? Because five wins in a row, like...
It's not as unrealistic as it sounds. I mean, 10 Premier League teams did it last season and five of them did it twice. So
Okay, that's good.
It's not asking, because it's in all competitions as well. So, I mean, saying that, we're not in many competitions anymore.
But, yeah, Grimsby had something to say about that.
When I first started, obviously, you know, that's four different competitions that we were in at the time. So, yeah, it's not as unrealistic as it sounds, but... it's going to be difficult because, the Premier League's difficult. And now we've only got Premier League and FA Cup. So we're going to have to see. But, I'm still feeling optimistic for the rest of the season, hoping to get a haircut.
It's going to be a famous day when you do get a haircut. You should probably do it outside Old Trafford or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's got to be at Old Trafford, whether inside or outside. Hopefully on the centre circle, maybe.
That would be iconic before a game. Do you think actually any of the United players know about you? I'm sure they do. They're on social media. You have a huge following on social media. Your numbers are off the charts. Your TikTok and Instagram. Surely they have seen you.
Yeah, so I haven't had any direct contact with them. I think that it's maybe a bit of a weird one for them because they probably can't be seen to be kind of liking something that obviously shows that they're not doing their job.
It's so obvious there. Yeah, that's the best stat that they could get, like, right there.
A very visual stat there.
Yeah.
I have heard through a few other people that at least some of them do know about me. So maybe once there's a few more positive results, maybe there'll be a bit more contact then.
Yeah. And was Ten Hag the manager when you started?
He was, yeah.
And then your hopes for getting a haircut were probably a bit higher when Ruben Amorim stepped in then.
Yeah, there was even a little moment with Ruud van Nistelrooy in charge. Where,
that's right.
He did quite well for a bit. But yeah, obviously when Amorim came in, I was thinking, okay, well, it'll be any minute now then. But it's been a difficult start for him and continued to be difficult actually. But... yeah, I'm still backing him. I think that there's more positives than people think there are. I think that it's literally the results have not been good, but there's a lot of other positives around it that I feel like we're probably not as far away as people maybe think we are from being back to maybe not winning five in a row even, but being better than we have been.
Have you been supporting Manchester United all your life?
Yeah, no, absolutely. My family is split between Liverpool fans and Man United fans, and it was one or the other.
My God, the rest of the other half of your family must be loving your hair. How close has it been? How many games have you gotten to? Please don't tell me you've gotten to four games in a row.
No, not yet. So I think January this year was three out of five, and then... Man United lost against Palace and then they won against Leicester in the next game. So that would have been it if it wasn't for that Palace game. But unfortunately we go on.
You must get some attention when you go to Old Trafford. Do you go much or do you even try and avoid
it? I'm currently living in Spain at the moment. So
nice.
It's a bit more difficult than it has been. I tried to go and, I'm going to go a few times this season. But, the last time I went, it was pretty crazy.
Was it?
There was, I think I took probably 100 or 200 photos with different people. and that was actually, quite a while ago now. I think that was in April, but I'm going again this month. And I'll see the reaction again.
Yeah, so that was about 200 and something days into your challenge. I bet you never thought 200 and something days before that that you'd be getting swarmed in Old Trafford as a
not
celebrity. That must be tough going living in Spain with hair like that.
Yeah, I think that's been the toughest part of the challenge, to be honest.
Really?
The heat. Yeah, this summer is slightly cooling down now a little bit, but still very hot. But yeah, when it's like 35 degrees and I've got this on my head and around my face, it's too much.
Yeah. Well, I love your attitude. That's one thing I'll say. You remind me of Fellaini. That's who you remind me of. You probably get that a lot, do you?
Yeah.
Is he your favorite United player?
I feel like I've grown closer to him now. It feels like my hair twin, but, I feel like on the same wavelength.
Well, look, I'm rooting for you. To be honest, I'm really enjoying this journey, but also I feel like it can get quite dangerous while you're living over in Spain to have hair like you do. You look incredible. Your vibe is incredible. And I think Manchester United, when they do win 5 games in a row, they should be inviting you to Old Trafford, and you can cut it there. Frank, where can people find you?
So on all social media, at the United Strand.
Yeah, and I highly recommend people to have a look, because the hair just keeps growing and growing and growing. And look, I'm enjoying it as a neutral fan. I'm enjoying it. Frank, thanks so much for coming on the kickoff. Thanks so much for talking to me.
No problem.
Best of luck for the season. We'll be keeping an eye on your hair and Manchester United.
Speak to you soon.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.